Thank you, Tom. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to The Way of Truth. My name is Kenny Chumley. I'm the preacher for the Gibson City Church of Christ, and it's a pleasure to have you with us this morning as we continue our study talking about the truth of Christianity. We're talking about the reliability of the Bible because our belief in the truth of Christianity depends upon the veracity of the book we call the Bible. We'll get to that in just a minute, but before we do, let me take just a minute here to tell you about the Church of Christ in Gibson. We are a non-denominational group of believers, followers of Christ, and we meet every Sunday for worship. We begin at 9 o'clock with Bible classes. I'm currently in the adult class teaching from Luke chapter 14. We have classes for all ages. That starts, as I said, at 9 o'clock. At 10 o'clock, we worship through singing and prayer and reading Scripture, eating the Lord's Supper, and preaching. The sermon this morning is God the Son. We take a short break at the conclusion of the sermon, and then we reassemble for a second Bible study that lasts for about 20 to 30 minutes. We're looking at the sacrifices in the book of Leviticus currently. On Wednesdays, we have a midweek study at 7 o'clock. We have classes for all ages. And in the adult class, we're in the book of Revelation, Revelation chapter 14, this coming Wednesday. And we have a website, GibsonCityChurchOfChrist.com. And we've got a lot that you can find at the website. We've got audio files of these radio sermons. We have audio files of the regular Sunday sermons. We have copies of our weekly bulletin. We have correspondence courses and other information that tells you about the Gibson City Church of Christ. And so GibsonCityChurchOfChrist.com is where you can find all that information. And I wanted to mention that the building where we meet is on Route 47, south side of town, just north of what used to be the Pizza Hut. I was sad to see that go, see that close down. And we hope you'll find a chance to worship with us. We continue our studies this morning into the veracity of the Word of God, the Bible. The story of Jesus is told in a book. And a book is a perfectly valid way to communicate information or facts or truth. It's a good way to tell something. But books can contain misinformation. They can contain distortions and lies and false information. And so people have devised tests. Historians, bibliographers, readers have devised tests to check the credibility, the reliability of a document that they're reading. And in regard to the Bible, the three historical tests that are commonly used that we've been talking about are the bibliographical, the internal, and the external. Now, so far, we've been talking about the bibliographical test, which looks at how many manuscripts are there of an ancient document. What's the time gap between the events that the document talks about and the earliest copy we have of the book? How close to the original are the earliest copies? And we've looked at those considerations over the past few weeks and have discovered that there is no book from antiquity that has higher historical attestation than does the Bible. No other book even comes close. It stands at the head of the class. Now, the internal test looks at what's actually in the document under consideration. For instance, are there any contradictions in the document? And the Bible, the New Testament, has no contradictions in it. For instance, Matthew and Luke both agree that Jesus was born at Bethlehem. Now, the Book of Mormon says he was born at Jerusalem, so there's a disagreement between the Book of Mormon and the Bible, and for reasons we'll not get into now, I don't believe the Book of Mormon has it right. But in the New Testament, there is agreement from two different witnesses, Matthew and Luke, that Jesus was born at Jerusalem. Now, are there variations between the gospel documents? Is the same story told in slightly different ways? And the answer to that is yes. But that's exactly what you would expect from independent eyewitness accounts. When people collude together, they all say the same thing much the same way. You know, I sometimes listen to talk radio, And every once in a while on various shows, there will be a sound clip of where different news anchors from different networks, CBS, NBC, ABC, CNN, on, are all reporting on the same event using almost exactly the same words. Now, that's not what you expect from independent accounts. What that suggests is that they are all getting their story from the same source, and that's why they report it in the same way. But that's not what we have in the New Testament. We have variations of style of reporting that are consistent with what you would expect from independent accounts of the same event. Now, I'd like to talk a bit more this morning about some of the internal considerations that strengthen our confidence that the New Testament is reliable. Let me try to get through five of these this morning, the first of which is that the New Testament writers include embarrassing details about themselves. You know, historians have what they call the test of embarrassment. If a document they're looking at contains embarrassing information or revelation about the person who wrote the document, the odds are increased that the document is true, because people don't like to reveal embarrassing information about themselves. They don't like to put out information that makes them look bad. But that's exactly what we have in the New Testament. The Gospels were written by men, two in particular, who record things that makes them look bad. When you read the Gospels, the apostles, the 12 apostles, sometimes come off looking dim-witted, insensitive, arrogant, and cowardly. And there are many examples of all of those. In the Garden of Gethsemane, for instance, Jesus asked Peter, James, and John to pray with him. And he comes back, and you know what they're doing? They are sleeping. Peter is called Satan by Jesus. Now, how embarrassing is that? That you suggest something to Jesus, you say something to him, and he calls you Satan in reply. That happened to Peter. And then Jesus goes to the cross, and you know what happened to these friends of his? They all deserted him. They were devout cowards. They all took off and ran and hid. And then we have that account of Peter denying Christ three times in the courtyard of the high priest. I mean, books that are made up, stories that are made up, that are written from the human perspective or the writer's perspective, do not include information like this. The Gospels pass the embarrassment test. The Gospels also contain some embarrassing details about Jesus that, if they were simply writing from their own human wisdom and inclinations, probably would not have included material like this. They tell us, for instance, that Jesus' family thought he was crazy. The Gospels tell us that his own brothers didn't even believe him and somewhat taunted him in the Gospel of John. The Gospels tell us that many of his followers, after they had been with him for some time, simply deserted him. The Gospels tells us that Jesus was accused of being an alcoholic, that he was said to be demon-possessed, that he was called a madman, and that he had his feet washed with the hair of a prostitute, wiped with the hair of a prostitute. Now, when you're making up a story, those are the kinds of details that you tend to leave out, that you don't put in. But all of those details, all of that information is found in the Gospels. A third consideration. Not only do the Gospels contain embarrassing details of Christ, but they include the difficult sayings of Jesus. You know, if you were making up a religion, you would probably make up one that made life easier for you rather than harder, that allowed you to engage in whatever activity you wanted to engage in without there being any sinful or wrong consequences, but that's not the way it is in the New Testament. For instance, the Gospels tell us in Matthew chapter 5 that if you look lustfully at someone, you've committed sin in your heart. If a man looks lustfully upon a woman, he's committed adultery in his heart. The Gospels tell us that we are not to resist evil people. We're to turn the other cheek, which is the exact opposite of our common defense mechanisms. The Gospels tell us not to store up treasures on earth. Now, how many of us take that seriously? I mean, especially in America, life is often about storing up treasure, getting more stuff, accumulating more money. The Gospels tell us, don't do that. And so we could keep going on. If thinking a sin is sinful, everyone, including those who wrote the Gospels, have sinned. Everyone are sinners. But that's the kind of book the Gospel writers wrote. They wrote a book that indicted them, that convicted them of sin. And there is so much in the Gospels that goes against our grain, that goes against our normal instincts, and who in their right mind would ever have set out to write a book like that? Number four, the Gospel writers carefully distinguish between what Jesus said and what they said. Now, first century Greek, that's the language in which the Gospels were written, did not have quotation marks. But the Gospel writers make it very clear when Christ is speaking and when they are just narrating, telling the story. And that's why it's possible to have red letter editions of the New Testament. You know, you've seen those Bibles where you open them up in the Gospels and the words of Jesus are in red. Now, the reason this is an important consideration is because if the writers of the Gospels had wanted to, they could very easily have put words in the mouth of Jesus and changed those sections that convict them of sin or condemn them. I mean, they could have left out that part about Jesus calling Peter Satan, or they could have changed it in some way. But no, they were very careful and they were very precise in saying, here's what Jesus said, even when it convicted them, even when it said what they believed about something or what they were doing in some way was wrong, they still included that language. In fact, the Apostle Paul, for instance, in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 12, he goes out of his way to distinguish what Jesus said on an issue regarding marriage and what he, Paul, had to say. And so the carefulness with which the words of Christ are recorded, even when they are accusing and convicting of the writers, is a strong argument for the reliability and the genuineness of the New Testament. And then number five, the New Testament writers include events connected with the resurrection that they simply would not have invented. One example involves the burial of Jesus. Christ was buried by a man by the name of Joseph of Arimathea, who was a member of the Sanhedrin. Now, if you are familiar with your New Testament, you'll remember that it was the Sanhedrin, the Jewish High Council, that sentenced Jesus to death on the false charge of blasphemy. And I suspect there was a great deal of bitterness toward the Jewish authorities on the part of the followers of Christ for what they did to Jesus. And who would have thought of making a member of that group, taking a member of the Sanhedrin, and putting him in such a favorable light as occurred when we read that it was Joseph who took the body of Jesus, who wrapped it and placed it in his own new tomb? No one writing in the first century would have had the women to be the first witnesses to the resurrection of Jesus because women didn't have any legal standing back in that day. They were not allowed to give testimony in court. And yet, Women were the first one to hear the news of Christ's resurrection and the first one to see Jesus after he was resurrected. There's just so much in the Gospels that never would have been there if it had been written by first century Jewish men writing from their own milieu, their own context, and telling the story like they wanted to tell it. Now, I'll continue this discussion of things from the Gospels that strengthen our belief in its credibility next week, but I appreciate you for listening in today, and I do hope you have a good week, and we'll be back with us next Sunday at 8 o'clock for The Way of Truth.